BRG.brands, trends and use cases, March 15th, 2018, starting at 10:30, ending at noon in room 103A.
It is 10:30. If everybody could please take their seats. If everybody could fill in the table, it'd be easier because you're sitting behind us. It's really hard to talk with you. So come move forward.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining our BRG open session. I'm Cecilia Smith, president of the Brand Registry Group, and really appreciate you all being here on the last day of the ICANN meeting here. We have, due to the Adobe issue, we don't have the Adobe Connect available, and I know that we have a few people who are logged in remotely, which means that you get to see us, but you can't talk to us or yell at us directly. So if you do have any questions, please email ICANN61-103A@ICANN.org. It's also published on the ICANN site as well. So just a little background about the Brand Registry Group. I see a lot of familiar faces, but for those who don't know us, we are a trade association for brand owners who have their own dot brand. Some of our members have dot brand specific TLDs, but we do have a few members who also have open, so there is a bit of a mix. And we also have members who are very interested in the next round who didn't make it in the first round there. So we represent over 70 dot brand TLDs. And so with that, since we have somebody dialed in from Australia, and it's about 1 in the morning for him, we have Tony Kirsch on the line who's going to go through a few slides, well, actually, a number of slides with us on his dot Newstar brand process here. Do we have Tony set up?
Tony,
good morning, everybody. Can you hear me?
Excellent.
Good morning, Tony. Thank you for being here.
Hi, everybody. How are we going for the screen, Martin?
So we've got your first slide up. So if you could just tell us to nudge along whenever you need to. So we're on BRG open session and ready to go when you are. But just to make sure that people are aware, we're going to focus on a lot of what .Newstar has been able to achieve with their launch and operation of their dot brand. Tony's just going to outline a little bit of the broader scene as well for us. So we'll run through this and have a chance for Q&A at the end. Thanks, Tony. Over to you.
Fantastic. Thanks, Martin. Hello, everybody. As Martin mentioned, I thought we'd share with you some of our experiences in moving over to dot Newstar, which has been a long journey for our organisation. Some of you in the audience no doubt are sort of more familiar with us as potentially one of your vendors in this space, but I guess just to move forward, we'll click through the slides, Martin, thank you. To introduce myself, if I haven't met you along these ICANN journeys, as you can see here, sorry for the photo, my name is Tony Kirsch. I lead the advisory business at Newstar, but in particular my role here is very much about helping our clients to understand, number one, the potential, I guess, of a dot brand TLD and what that can mean for your organisation. And then for some of the people that we work with, we then sort of help them a little bit more on implementing that. This is not necessarily designed as a sales pitch. I'm not here to sell you anything, but I wanted to just sort of show you that we're very fortunate. We look after about 160 dot brands around the world, including, you know, many of the Fortune 500 sort of really well-known global brands. So that's really my experience in this. Number one, as working with a lot of those clients. Number two, as working with the .Newstar TLD that we've just migrated to over the last last 3 or so months. Some of you may have seen a presentation that includes some of this earlier in the week in one of the ICANN meetings. We'll move forward a slide, please, Martin. What we've also done is built a website called makeway.world. Again, this is just free information that we're sharing with the community. I thought what I'd just share with you, for those of you that are new to the topic, is some of the stats. There's a lot of discussion within the .RAN community that things are moving relatively slowly, but certainly in my experience, that's over the last 12 months not necessarily been as much the case. So as you can see here, we're looking at 560-odd .RANs that are delegated. The important thing here is to have a look at towards more to the right-hand side of that and start to look at the fact that there's almost 11,500 .RAN domains being registered. If you've got access to this data, you'll be able to see that there's, typically anywhere between 10 and 50 domains being registered each day across the portfolio of .RANs. And if we move forward a slide, what I thought some of you may even find interesting is to realise that almost two-thirds now of companies as we speak today are using their .RAN. And when I say using their .RAN, I mean using it above and beyond the mandatory NIC page. And what I thought was also interesting is to show you very quickly why we've moved to .Newstar. I'm going to elaborate a little more about that at a corporate level for us, but I think the first thing to note is that we were not the first. So for many of you, you may recall that back in the Dublin meeting, I think it was 2015, maybe even 16, one of our clients, Barclays, they were one of the first to do it. We move forward in the slide. And since then, we've seen really four main types of usage across the .RAN game. So I'm going to show you a little bit of context around what we're seeing from the marketplace, and then I'm going to show you how we've manipulated and used some, if not all, of these skills in our .Newstar launch. The first of these, obviously, if we go forward a slide, and then again, Martin, onto the Barclays one, please. The first of these, as I mentioned, was Barclays, the British bank, moving from barclays.com over to home.barclays. That was an enormous step. These guys did that, as I mentioned, back in 2015. It was an enormous step and a very positive one for the organisation. They've subsequently been joined by 19 other organisations, if we move forward a slide on to see Canon. There's many others, genuinely household names that have been able to do this and move their organisations across onto their .RAN. Typically speaking, you'll see this occur when people are doing something else. It could be moving a CMS or a content management system. It could be that you're redesigning your website. And typically what we've seen from most organisations in this space is when you're doing something else, enhancing your security, it sort of gives you an opportunity to look at a fresh start. And that's certainly what's been the case with organisations such as Canon and Barclays. But if we move forward onto looking at another analogy here, this is more for your microsites. If we skip forward again, we'll look at Google and what they've done here. So as everyone will know, Google.com is obviously the search engine that we all very much use every day. But what they've done with a lot of their new products, it's a bit difficult probably for you to see on that slide, but they're microsites that have been generated for, top left-hand corner is environment.google, to the top right is blog.google, and then in the middle at the bottom there is ai.google. And these are the things that Google's starting to roll out when they've got a new product and it makes sense for it to exist on a domain that's outside the core. Example of Google.com, they're able to roll these out with flexibility and speed. And I think this is really important for the for the .RAN group. And certainly if we roll forward one more slide, you'll see that, with Amazon doing a similar thing here with .AWS, this is really starting to show and give confidence to people in the last 12 months that using a .RAN as a big organisation is something that's really achievable. And this microsite concept gives people an ability to be able to do that without necessarily impacting and having to worry about design implications and SEO implications on the core site. So if we skip forward, the next opportunity here is looking at what we call vanity or redirect URLs. If you're not familiar with this context, I'll show you a picture if we skip forward onto the slide here with Chase. In a traditional model, you would go to chase.com and obviously acquire that website. And what we've done is we've started to explore other ways that you can get through to that content. So for the illustration and clarity here, there is no website at home.chase. There is just a simple domain name, renavigates the user through to chase.com. And I've heard some conversations about that this week. I know that there's been some discussion within the community as to seeing some vanity URLs and starting to say, well, hang on, is that really a good use of a .dot brand? And I think we should really have, as a community, a really strong think about that, right? Domain names don't always have to have websites on them, okay? And I think in particular for those of you that have got a .dot brand or that are looking at a .dot brand, not only is a redirect model like this a really important and an easy and safe way for you to start using your .dot brand, but there's actually a really strong element as to why you might want to consider it. And the first part, and probably the most easy to grasp around that, is just the simplicity that comes from being able to type the domains that you were cognitively thinking. So if we scroll down, slide please, Martin. I can show you some examples of around sort of 60 or so companies. Most of these will be names that you're very familiar with that have already started to use this from a naming standards perspective, okay? So home.brand, as you can see here, is the generally accepted path or industry standard for what your homepage may be. Now, in and of itself, that's great that we're doing it from a standard perspective, but I think that the most important part here is that it starts to set a trend as to what might happen. So if we move forward a slide, you can see here that not only can you find the New York Yankees content via Yankees.com, which ironically, if you test this out on your mobile phone or if you've got your computer in front of you, if you type in Yankees.com, you'll see that you get redirected to a far longer URL on the MLB.com extension. Now, the interesting thing here is we've also created Yankees.mlb. And what that's been able to do is to start to get people thinking about different pathways to being able to find the content in something that's far more easy and simple to use. So for those of you that have been part of that discussion during the week and you've been talking about vanity URLs, I think that old school thinking of domain names have to have websites and a very, very sort of traditional GTLD model is something that is probably, in my view, not the case. And certainly social media and other technologies that we've used today have shown us that it's not necessarily the case that you need to have a website on your domain. It's all about creating efficient pathways for your customers to your content. And that's what people have done. If we move forward a slide here, you can see that careers.forward, not surprisingly, redirects to the recruitment page, but it's quite a long URL where it redirects to, and it's not hard to see why a user would intuitively find that careers.forward URL far easier to be able to type in or click. And similarly, if you go forward a slide, please, to cloud.cisco, it's the same sort of thing. So I think it's a really important discussion. We're not going to go deep on it today, but we very strongly believe in the power of vanities for a variety of reasons to suit certain cases of using .newstar. We don't do it all the time, but we absolutely do it in certain cases where it makes sense for us. And then the fourth and final area where we looked at this, if we skip forward a slide, is social media. We'll go forward a slide again, please, to the bit.ly slide. The interesting thing here, guys, is that when we look at social media, this has really evolved by way of links over the last probably 5 to 7 years. And as is the case in most technologies, you typically start with the quickest, the easiest, the free version, and that's very much what bit.ly has been all about. But as they've started to move into a more commercial model and they've started to look more at branded links, their data themselves, this is a bit.ly link, you can see the bottom, you can look this up if you want to test it out. Bit.ly released a case study, it's about 12 to 18 months old, that said that when you put your brand in your links and you don't use, ironically, the bit.ly type short links in your social media, that you'll get an increase of at least 34% in your click-through ratios. So that's why you can see, if we move over a slide, you can see organisations starting to really use their .dot brand as part of this. So whether it's Citibank, HSBC, Philips or Prudential, I thought I'd just pull out some examples for you, that people are starting to realise that shorter and branded, and in our case, as a community, the people within this room, great as we go along. So if we move forward a slide, I'll pause for questions in just a moment. I thought I'd just, before I talk about .dot Newstar, explain to you why this matters to marketers. It's my very strong belief that the power of the .dot brand really lies in the hands of the marketers, and it probably lies in the hands of marketers using it initially to really help the business, you know, make their advertising more effective, save costs and other reasons I'm going to show you in a moment. But also I think it's the future. I think it's the future that as we look for new technologies, that using your dot brand is going to be, have this incredible importance and strength for organizations as we move forward. So if we skip forward, I make no sort of apologies for this. This is exactly what we at Newstar were all about in moving to .Newstar. I'm going to show you exactly what we did and why we did it. We wanted to use .Newstar to tackle the issues that were facing our organization. If we skip forward a slide, I'm going to show you the top six things as to what we were using and why we did it. This is what matters to marketers. When I'm talking to my CMO and CMOs around the world, these are the things that when we sit down with them and say, hey, listen, what could we do? What were the key touch points in your role that we could make a difference for? If we could make a difference, what would really excite you? And these are the six things that they say. They want to get better customer engagement. They want more effective advertising. They need to manage their costs and increase their security for obvious reasons. They are all about consistency and personalization. And they want to create a model where if they're going to make a change in their business, that that change is capable of being sustained over a long term. If you're a CMO or you're a chief digital officer, what you're sick of doing is consistently moving across multiple platforms. And the advent of social media, whilst wonderful for marketers, has also created a number of headaches being able to manage multiple applications. So if we look at and we skip forward a slide, let me show you an example of what's changing in the marketing world. First of all, search is starting to answer the question instead of redirect you to the location as we've typically done. And you're seeing, if you looked at in last week's sort of changes to a lot of the search algorithms, you're seeing significant changes in the way that responses are not only coming from the search engines, but you're also seeing consistent change from the consumer as to the questions that were being asked. Okay, so you can see here, for example, that you know someone's more and more starting to type cognitive questions in who won the 1969 World Series. Okay, now if we skip forward a slide, the other thing that's really on the mind of CMOs is voice search. And as you can see here, ComScore predicted by the end of 2020 that 50% of all searches will be done by voice. And if you think about it, that's not really all that far away. We're talking just over 18 months where they're starting to think that voice is going to significantly change the game. Now, this is also a really important part of our .Newstar journey. We have identified this, and we believe that .Newstar significantly increases our probability of being a foundation of our voice search strategy, and I'm going to show you some examples of that as we move along. Before we talk about .Newstar, and we'll pause for just a couple of seconds to see if there's any questions. Moving forward a slide onto the Chase slide, please. These are the things that are also impacting digital marketers. They're looking at ways of making their experience more secure, and that includes their advertising experience. Here's an article that you can see from the New York Times, where Chase moved their advertising from 400,000 sites. You can think of these as little sort of sidebar ads that may have appeared on a news site or something like that. And they realized that their brand was being put in places where they didn't want it to happen. This is often referred to as programmatic advertising for those of you that are familiar with that topic. And they've realized that a lot of this was they were putting their information in the wrong place. If we skip forward a slide, this is consistent with organizations like Procter & Gamble, who are really starting to put the pressure on digital and media partners to be accountable to them. They're finding more and more and more that digital advertising is not working for them and they want to start to take control and go direct to consumer in many ways. Final slide on this just before we get going is to talk about the change. Brands are changing, and I hope there's maybe potentially people from these organizations in. The news came out yesterday. That it's interesting that what would otherwise have been, I think, if you looked at the stats a year or two ago, that Apple and Google were organizations that were, you know, ranking quite highly in people's brand perception. Things change. So CMOs not only want to look at environments where we can control the message, but they want to protect the brand at all costs. We move forward a slide here. And this is a client, this is about 2 years ago, we were doing a workshop with a client. And I still maintain that this is the best thing that I've ever heard from a client so far. He says, our brand will live every product, innovation and service, and frankly, every person in this company. It should be the core of everything we do. So when we're talking about dot brand TLDs, we're not talking about small assets, little, you know, fly-by-night promotions or apps or technologies that may or may not last the length of time. These are our brands. And that's why I strongly believe that the use of dot brand, in light of this quote, will be something that, as we collectively keep moving in this industry over the next year or two, that we start to really, you know, find options and ways that we can make these dot brands the cornerstone and the foundations of our digital footprint. And with that, get our, you know, additional security and data and advertising effectiveness and all the things that I've mentioned before. We skip forward a slide because this is the end game. And it's very much what we've been about with Dot Newstar. We're going to use our dot brand everywhere. We're going to use it to protect and enhance the brand, to simplify our digital engagement, and we're going to use it for the future benefit of our organisation. And I think hopefully for those of you in the room that have got one, or if you're interested to get one, this is the end game. The benefit that you will get from it is when you're using it and you're using it everywhere, and it becomes the culture of your digital organisation. So forgive me, it's always difficult to do these presentations with other people in the room. I can't tell if you're all asleep. I'll pause just here to see if there's any questions, and then we'll start to talk about Dot Newstar.
We've just woken them back up again, Tony.
Excellent.
No questions at the moment, so you can head on to the Dot Newstar.
Excellent. Thanks, Martin. All right, so let's have a look at what we did for Dot Newstar. Again, for those of you that saw this, some of these slides earlier in the week, apologies. As I said before, we're just skipping down to the slide, which is why transition to Dot Newstar, please. Why did we do it? For us, it was four or five key points. We wanted to help our customers to find our information easily. We had tens of thousands of pages on our website. It had grown organically over time, and for a variety of reasons, it was just becoming very difficult to manage. And frankly, we're not even sure it was performing in the way that we would have liked it to have done. So as a result of that, we wanted to help our customers to find our content really easily. We wanted to make our advertising and our customer experience really simple. In doing that, we wanted to reduce our costs. I'm going to explain a little bit more about that in a moment. We see Dot Newstar as a cost reduction activity, and we will significantly, when I say invest, we will significantly focus on using Dot Newstar as the basis for cost reduction. We wanted to enhance our security. We'll move forward a slide, please. We're a B2B company. We had a lot of partners and a lot of customers where we see Dot Newstar being the cornerstone of our relationship and the way that we interact with them and the trust that can come from that. We've already seen a significant increase in our first party data. And as I mentioned before, we make no secret of it. We were in the middle of doing our website redevelopment, and it made sense for us to tie the Dot Newstar transition from our traditional domain, which was newstar.biz. That's what we use for everything in our organisation. And we're able to align that with a new website, a new CMS infrastructure, and put Dot Newstar all as part of one project. So let's skip forward two slides, please. I'll show you the key project elements and show you sort of what we did, what we believe to be as close to a complete transition as we've seen in the marketplace today. The first part obviously being a migration from newstar.biz to home.newstar. We picked up a lot of the old content and sort of filtered it, processed it, cleaned it up, and effectively put it into a new ecosystem in home.newstar. Over the slide, we then started to look at a combination of a transition to home.newstar, but we also took a microsite approach, as I was referring to you with earlier. So what we realised that within our five key business areas in our business is that the security content was very different to the marketing content, and the registry content was indeed very different to the risk content. These are sort of our five sort of key business areas. So we built microsites for each one of those, and we made very content-rich sites that were able to rank extremely well in search, but also benefit from the naming convention of being linked to from home.newstar. It's a consistent look and feel across the entire environment. But we're able to effectively have a macro layer in home.newstar and then a far more micro site-driven approach with the verticals that you can see at the bottom. Over the slide, we then took an enormous amount of redirects. We went and assessed all of our traffic, our site structures, our navigation on our websites. We looked at our customer experience, and we looked at all of the things that people might want to do on our website. So, for example, you could go to contactus.newstar. It will redirect you to home.newstar/something. But if you want to find contactus.newstar, if you go over the slides, you want to find news.newstar. We're starting to create as many pathways to our content for our customers to use intuitively. We want our customers typing this into the browser, using .newstar in the domain, and we strongly believe that for each one of our customers that does that on a regular basis, we receive not just a brand perception benefit and a perception of being innovative, but we believe that we're going to save costs and make our customer experience significantly better. Over the slide. But we can't ignore the fact that some people like to search. We still know that people are going to search. We understand all of that. Our SEO is incredibly important to us. But we did build our own search engine. It's a very, very simple project. You can go to search.newstar and see what's been happening there. And, of course, if you skip over the slides, you'll see the results set here where there's no competitor information and no ads. Okay, we're able to tune, I guess you could use as the right word, that .newstar experience and ensure that we're providing what our customers are looking for and effectively respond to that in real time. And then as I showed you, if we move over the slide, we've done the same thing in social media. So we use .newstar in our URL shortener on Twitter over the slide. We're also using, you can see here my email address if you've got any questions or comments, or maybe even you'd like to make some further comment on this presentation privately, you're welcome to do so. That's my email address, tony.kirsch@team.newstar. We now have moved all of our staff, I think we've got 3,000 or 4,000 staff globally, we've moved all of their email addresses over to team.newstar. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. And the best part of it, I think, also as a marketer, was moving over the slide, was to look at how do we communicate this to our customer base. So we spent a lot of time creating some web content and email content for our internal and external stakeholders around .newstar and why we've moved to it over the slide. And we've started to look at ways, as I mentioned at the start, to reduce our costs. In our case, it was a number of areas. We're an organisation that does a lot of marketing. We wanted to reduce the amount of domains that we were acquiring, in particular in the aftermarket. We have a lot of products that are in key areas that are highly competitive, whether it's security or marketing. Typically, our domains that we were buying in the aftermarket were very expensive. This way, using .newstar, we're able to use them that are on brand, but we're able to get them. Of course, they were available. They were very cheap and easy to register. And very quickly, we're starting to look at ways of being able to reduce the number of defensive registrations that we have and start to reinvest our brand equity in .newstar. We go over the slide, please. And it also meant that we were able to start to slowly reduce the amount of exposure that we have in paid search. And because this sort of experience is something that still bothers, we don't love the fact that people can use search and then find advertisements from our competitors sitting well and truly above our results set. You can see here that, you know, marketing.newstar is ranking number one for organic, but many users are still sort of clicking on those ads at the top. So we wanted to find an experience where we could overcome that. And the way that we're going to do it is, as we move over the slide, is we're going to use .newstar in all of our advertising. So you can see here we're going to use marketing.newstar within the brochures. And moving over the slide to the green. The game for us, very quickly, is to look at anything.newstar. We use the DNS traffic to monitor for NX domains. For those of you that are not familiar with that, we monitor to see what people are typing in to the left-hand side of .newstar. We monitor to see whether there's mistypes. We see if there's things that people are typing in that we hadn't thought of. All of that traffic we're capturing and we're monitoring and creating domains in near real time to make sure that our digital content has its own identity. And this is the game for us. Over the next 1 to 2 to 3 years, we will continue to not only reinforce domains like marketing.newstar in our advertising, but we will also start to reinforce the opportunity for our customers to effectively type in whatever they want .newstar and put the pressure on ourselves to be good enough to give them the right results, the right customer experience, and give them the quickest and most trusted experience that is available online right now. And that's the ability to type whatever you want and in one step get to the content that you're looking for. And there is no other methodology of being able to do that right now on the web. Okay, so let's have a look over the slide. I'll show you very quickly what we managed to achieve with this, right? And if we move over the slide one more time, I wanted to sort of show you, before I get into the good stuff, I guess these are the questions that I'm asked almost every time. The five main things. First of all, universal acceptance. Did this even work? Where did it go wrong? Let me address that for you. I've been working on projects for dot brand clients since 2014. When dot brand clients in 2014 were typically using them, there were universal acceptance issues. In some cases, it would be browser related. So, for example, on your mobile device or in your desktop, it may not have worked in the way that you would have wanted to, especially if you had a brand that had more than 3 or 4 characters. Those issues do not happen anymore. There were issues in terms of other platforms that may be used. So, for example, you may have a CMS or you may have a marketing automation system or something like that. Back in 2014, 2015, there were those issues. We have not encountered more than a handful of minor universal acceptance issues that we were able to work directly with the vendors on and have them rectified immediately. So from our perspective, whilst we don't for a second think that all of the universal acceptance issues at a highly technical level are resolved, from Newstar's perspective, we have not had any lasting universal acceptance issues, and .Newstar, from what we use it for, which is everything that I've just shown you, has worked perfectly. Email, has been a fantastic thing, right? We love the .Newstar email address, number one, because it helped us to educate our staff. Not everyone in our business understood about the .Newstar project. It was an impossible thing to market and communicate to, 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 people. And giving them a new email address, they suddenly just got it. And we've done all sorts of research around with our staff, and they were like, yeah, I get it now. I probably wouldn't have got it if you didn't give me an email address, but now I get it. Yeah, we're just .Newstar now. We're not newstar.biz. It's kind of simple. We just got rid of the .biz bit. Makes sense. Email does occasionally. We typically report about one a month where we get in touch with either a vendor, or it may be, for example, we might use the universal acceptance group to report an email where a form is still hard-coded. But with today's modern libraries, very rarely does that happen. Certainly, as I said, that was more the case in 2014, 2015. Very, very rarely do we find that now. We experienced no downtime. The success of moving from newstar.biz to home.newstar was seamless. It was a 9-month planning journey for those that are interested from the project side. It involved a variety of people, everything from our external agencies, internal to digital technology, DNS. I guess we're fortunate in the sense that we have access to some really good resources in that space, but certainly no downtime. In fact, more the opposite. It's been amazing. I'll talk about search in a moment. And then I guess the logical question is, how much effort was required in it versus the benefit? And look, I guess we should speak about that really candidly. The effort required in it was noticeable. I wouldn't call it substantial, but it was noticeable. As I said, it was a 9-month planning project. I don't think that we had more than one or two people dedicated to it at any point in time, but it did require communication and engagement with a large number of senior stakeholders and implementation type people. Now, whether it's different parts of our technology team, different product areas, there was quite a bit of effort and time that was invested in this migration. And certainly the planning to deal with all of the redirects and deal with the new structure was significant. However, the benefit to us as an organisation, I guess, is twofold. The benefit for us as an organisation is that we now have a new brand identity, which has been important for us to sort of talk internally about what we're doing with .Newstar, and in particular where our business is going. Have we achieved all of the benefits that we were hoping for in terms of, cutting all of our costs? And, it doesn't work like that. For us, we see this as an investment in the future, and we're looking at the benefit of moving to .Newstar being directly proportional to the amount of effort that we put in place to advertise it and tell our customers about its benefit. So we're incredibly, we're now exactly 3 months in. we're going to write a report. I'm going to show you something that we've done in a moment. I'm going to show you some reports around what the statistics around that have been. But certainly from a search results perspective, we've found the process of doing this has been incredibly seamless. Most of the search engines provide you with webmaster tools that allow you to move from one domain to another. There is typically a small dip in the amount of if you want to sort of aggregate it and call it SEO power in your website for a week or two, and now it's back, if not better, than where it's ever been. So I guess we're just sort of speaking pretty openly with you about the outcomes, but we're incredibly happy with the move to .newstar and would certainly advocate this to anyone in the room that's entertaining it. Over the slide, just a couple more to go. I think that the key for this from our perspective was about communication. Most of you work for organisations that have capability of planning projects, you have technical resources. That's not really the hard part. The hard part is about how do you communicate it? How do you communicate the benefits, the vision? How do you make sure that you can get people involved? And particularly, as you're doing the actual migration, it's one of those things that you have to be completely committed to. So in our case, we made we obviously did a lot of trial and a lot of planning. We've focused an enormous amount and taken an enormous amount of confidence from getting it done and getting it done quickly, and then getting immediately into BAU or business as usual mode. What can we learn? What can we continue to modify each and every day to make sure that we didn't just do .newstar as a one-off project. We have made the corporate culture and the way that we view our digital footprint completely based around .newstar, and we'll continue to invest in that each and every day. For those of you over the slide, just onto the stats page, please. It's called Our Metrics. I thought I'd just give you some quick stats. Since we've moved to .newstar, as I said, we did that early December last year, and it's now March, so I guess we're looking at it roughly 3 or so months since we've done that. Let's talk about what's happened. Our page views have gone up 20%. Our total sessions are up 22%. Our returning users are up 25%, and our new users are up 24% over the slide. Our organic search traffic by way of total footprint is up 12%. Our direct type traffic, which I think is one of the key metrics that I'm looking for, is up 10%. The number of leads that we're getting is up 8%. And our page depth and time on site, also two really strong indicators for us, not necessarily due to .newstar. I think it would be fair to say this has probably got as much to do with the site redesign as it does around the naming. But nonetheless, really important for us to see that those overarching metrics have been strong. We haven't got any of our metrics that we use as our keys that have gone down. And that's a great sign for us. We're happy to invest in this in the future. What we were looking for in the first 3 months was to make sure that it was safe and that it was reliable and it was working. This is all bonus gain for us, and we're looking at sort of maximising this as we move forward. So, what have we done? If you move over the slide, this is called launchguide.newstar. This is a free resource that's available to all of you. It doesn't matter if you're one of our customers or not. If you want to grab your phone or your laptop out now, feel free to jump online. You can download it. This is every step of what I've just been talking to you about with launchguide.newstar. It goes through it step by step, everything that I've just mentioned to you about the email and all those sorts of things. And feel free to take a copy of that and then use it for your internal project. Next slide, please. And for those of you that are interested, this is the sort of the summary report that we create. It's called the brandsreport.newstar. We do these twice a year. Again, it's a free resource available for anyone that's interested to be able to jump online and have a look and see what's going on in the industry. And then if we move over the slide just very quickly, this is makeway.world. I mentioned that before. All the examples, all the data, there's a stats hub in the top right-hand corner. You're welcome to use that for those in the room. This is just a place where we do blogging and all those sorts of things to try and sort of promote what's happening in the dot brand industry. But as I said, that's a free resource available for everyone. Okay, two slides to go. Let's just summarise this. Where to from here? And I'm sort of taking this over the slide, please, from an industry perspective. As I mentioned to you, I'm very fortunate I get to work with a large number of dot brand owners around the world. But it's an interesting sort of time, I think, for all of us. So where to from here? From our perspective, we will continue to relentlessly drive whatever is necessary to make the round one applicants for dot brands a success. We strongly believe in the future of this, and we strongly believe that the future of this relies on making an impact each and every day with current owners of dot brand TLDs to advocate for it. The more stories that we share, the more that we win collectively as a group. Second point is that we need to use this to solve real business problems. I'm going to talk about domain names in a moment, but I'm spending more and more and more time with organisations and understanding how dot brands can solve their real business problems. It's not a traditional domain model. We need to, you know, sort of open our eyes and think a little bit more about how can we use dot brands to cut costs or increase security and things like that, elements that, you know, that get the attention of organisations that really want to look for meaningful change in making this sort of progression to a dot brand. And one thing, if you haven't started, I'll give you, this is just one sort of, I guess, key bit of advice that I'd love to share with you, is that momentum breeds momentum. We did careers.newstar about 2 years before we moved from newstar.biz to home.newstar. We did our social media, we did our email. None of it happened without a purpose. We were always moving, you know, organically, and we were always getting more and more confidence, in particular from our executive. The more things that we did, the more confidence that we gained. So momentum breeds momentum. If you haven't started with anything, you know, it's a common thing you'll hear from Newstar, is that it's very important to just get started. And as I said, with .newstar, we really focused on making this a business culture. It's not a domain. It's our digital footprint and really starting to reinforce those languages. Final slide. Let's just go over the one here. For those of you that are still skeptical, I understand that. You know, I've certainly had many, many people talk to me about this, and in particular around the fact that we can't change consumer behaviour. Personally, I don't subscribe to that. I think that we change consumer behaviour in our advertising every day, and I think that as we use dot brands to make a better customer experience, the customers will learn online and they will adapt very, very quickly. So if you're doing it, do what we do. Feel free to join us. You know, evangelise your success. Share it with the world. Take my advice, if you will. Stop talking about domain names and all of the history of two characters and all the things that sort of plague us in the domain name industry, and just simplify it. This is about creating pathways for customers to engage with our business in trusted and intuitive ways. And then finally, for those that are sort of part of the journey, round two I think is an important part of it. We're continuing to advocate for that. We think that not only is it useful for the industry, but I think it's also useful for round one applicants. I think having more organisations supporting the journey, joining in, learning from us and bringing their own skills and interests and opportunities to the game can only help all of us. So with that, I'll pause for any questions and thank you for your time.
Go ahead. Hey, Tony, this is Cole Quinn. Thanks for your presentation. It was fantastic. I've seen some of these slides and material before, but one of the things that was new was the bit about voice search. And I was wondering if you could drill into that a little bit.
Sure. Thanks, Cole. So for a lot of organizations, what they're seeing is over the last, I guess, frankly, Cole, it's probably more like 10 years, the behavior from the user has changed to a predominantly, or ever-increasing, let me rephrase that, an ever-increasing search-first mentality. So whereas 10 years ago we went to CNN.com and we got our news, now we've got kind of a different way of approaching that, and whether it's through social or whether it's through search. More and more people are going, I guess, indirect to the content the content publishers. Voice, I think, adds a new layer of that. So the behaviour, as I represented earlier, was that in the past when we were typing into search, we would look at ways of shortening what we were typing to save ourselves time. We would sort of, you know, look for CNN news. And as we use voice, the ability to be able to do that without typing, and whether it's using one of the, you know, variety of voice tools that are available, gives us an ability to ask a deeper question in a more, more simple and quicker fashion as a consumer. So instead of, you know, typing CNN news into a search or even CNN.com, I can say, you know, show me the CNN news on the latest development in XYZ, right? So voice makes it easier for a consumer to search by default, that makes the experience for the brand at a higher risk, in my view. It increases the probability of that user not being able to get to the content that you were giving them. So we're exploring, to give you sort of a bit of insight as to what the next blog from us might be around, ideas where we may use calls to action that are driven by voice. So, for example, you may see a campaign from us, and the call to action, rather than saying, go to www.marketing.newstar, we may say, pick up your phone and say, go to marketing.newstar. And we believe very strongly that the dot brand domains have a very strong role to play as voice continues to, and I mean voice in the context of voice, you know, for example, Alexa, Google Home, those sorts of products, as well as Google navigation by way of, navigation by voice on cell phones, such as Siri, you know, Google Assistant. So we think very strongly that using those dot brand domain names works. In fact, we've proven that in the vast majority of circumstances, using a dot brand can indeed aid a voice campaign.
All right. Does anyone else have any questions for Tony?
Can you come up to the mic, please? Sorry, we haven't got a handheld. Thank you.
Tony, if you could bear with us. I know it's 1:15 in the morning for you. Go ahead. Please say your name.
No problem, Cecilia. No problem.
Hello. My name is Flavio Garcés from Colombia, and I am a new member of the fellowship program. I have a question. What do you think about translated that brand to another regions, for example, Latin America, the Caribbean, or Asia? What do you think about the possibility to extend to apply this method to another markets?
It's a great question. I won't pretend to be an expert in sort of multiple languages. We do have a couple of clients that we've worked with in the past that. One or two, I think, that have actually applied for transliterations of their brands, others that had thought about it and decided not to. I think it works, and I guess back to Cole's question around voice search, I see enormous potential for this, and I think that as people continue, for example, in the second round for applications, I think it's highly logical that brands will, where the brand is translated or spoken in a different way globally. So, for example, McDonald's in Arabic does not sound like that. It has a sort of a more Arabic tone to it. It has different characters. I could see that an organization like that might apply to have those. We haven't seen a lot of IDN.brands in the past, I think, because of a slower adoption of IDNs globally. But my intuition says, and I can't sort of, you know, give you anything other than that, my intuition says that this voice navigation opportunity may be the change in that sees an organization, instead of perhaps applying for one dot brand, maybe looking to acquire them specifically for in-country marketing where a different language is spoken.
If I can, it's Martin Sutton here, just to add to that. I think there are examples of dot brands that did apply for IDNs as well as ASCII. So there was CITIC, I think, as one example. And many of the applications, and I'm not sure how many, but during the process they declare what IDN tables they're going to have applicable on their registry. So it gives them the opportunity and flexibility to add those terms and strings into the left of the dot, which in turn, as I think we've had illustrated today from Tony, that on the voice side of things, that's going to be very valuable to use.
Okay. So, Tony, thank you again. I don't see any other questions. Really appreciate you dialing in at this odd hour for you, and always being a champion of dot brands. Makeway.world is viewed by many, many people here, and just for those in the room who came late, there is a brochure up here that Tony referenced. So if you need one, please come and grab one. There's actually two different brochures, so more for you all. So with that, Tony, thank you again. Have a good nap.
Thanks, guys. Safe travel right. Time.
Thank you. So we will move on to Martin, who's going to walk us through some of our dot brand use cases and trends. This is something that we monitor quite frequently, and we like to report to our own membership and to the community on what's happening in the dot brand world.
Thank you, Cecilia. Now, thankfully, Tony's done a majority of the job for me, so we can shrink this bit down to some extent and leave it open for some Q&A at the end, or we have an early lunch. So one of the things that I think is useful to bear in mind is that, you know, Tony from Neustar has had historically interactions with ICANN from a contracted party's perspective for many years, whereas a lot of brands that have applied have never been to ICANN and probably never will go to ICANN. There's only just a handful that do turn up, and originally their motives for turning up at ICANN meetings were not as a contracted party. So we need to be aware that many do not come to this place and are able to illustrate what their use cases are or intentions are. So we try and give you an impression of what is going on out there, because otherwise you probably wouldn't be aware of it unless perhaps you're a customer of the individual organization using some services that they've moved across to their dot brand space. So this just gives us a chance to flag this up, make sure that the awareness is strong, and you have a chance to ask me questions as we go along. So I'm quite happy for anybody to interject. If we go to the next slide, going on from what Tony was saying, there's different organisations, different verticals that have applied for their own brand registry. And like the .Neustar one, this example here of .Weir is a B2B entity. And they didn't have their .com domain. They didn't have weir.com originally. They had something else. And similar to what Tony said, there was a driver then to actually use the ability to apply for their own brand at the top level to change that significantly. So they took the opportunity to create a single platform which shows all of their global products and services and can be accessed in one easy place for their customers. But also it creates then a platform for the future, giving it the flexibility. They can adapt as they grow, change, and develop new products and services. So to be able to do that easily without having to scan around all of these other TLDs and figure out where you're going to put your namespace and what products are already taken, this is much easier and flexible to cover your future growth of your business. If we go to the next slide. Thank you. So we heard, I think there was on the slide some other banks, but I've just picked out this one, which is Barclays, and they've got .Barclays, .Barclaycard. There are others, but financial service providers, there's quite a few that have already activated and actually been using their TLDs in a substantive way. Here, just to pull out some of the reasons, the priorities that were given by Barclays, it was to simplify the online user experience and increase trust and confidence. So they felt this new platform could give continued and increased trust and confidence for their internet users. And this is where, you know, controlling your platform from the root of the internet right through to user delivery is something that was never achieved before. So I think what we've seen here with banks, that this is a B2C environment where they've got huge numbers of customers. When they move their internet banking services, to which I'm sure most of us now aim towards looking at our bank account once a week, if not once a day, they've converted many, many of their customers to using dot brands easily and daily in high volumes. Another example is BNP Paribas. And quite a while ago, they took the leap of faith to put mabank.bnpparibas into play, and through strong messaging with their customers, transferred them across within a very short period of time, but gave them the awareness that this is okay, this is why we're doing it, and, you know, if they've got 4 million plus internet online banking users, that's a lot of traffic that they've managed to push over into their brand TLD space. So I think one of the lessons learned here, though, is that for any of these brands that have activated, that there is the ability to, or the flexibility, I suppose, to use domains that are relevant in context and intuitive for their users. And I can see that, especially from some of the items that Tony was able to illustrate further before here. If we just go to the next slide. Now, given that these are completely different types of organizations and may have had different priorities to actually start using their dot brand, this is just to highlight that both are purpose-driven and not revenue-driven. It's not very clear in the ICANN community what these differences are, and I think that is a clear picture of what a dot brand is. It's purpose-driven. So the domains that are used and set up on there are for a purpose to support their business and to connect with their customers. Next slide. And Tony's given loads of examples, so we'll flick through these. I think there's about five examples on here, if we keep going. So, you know, this is just to give you a flavour of recent activity. And this is month on month. Everything's starting to shoot out, but you won't actually see it unless you're interacting in that particular brand for a particular reason that takes you to those sites. Now, this is all visible areas. There, behind the scenes, there could be internal projects for use cases that are not visible to you. So this is just a sample of what is going on in this space. So if we carry on. Now, given the activity that has emerged over the last 12 to 18 months, we've seen a strong and steady rise in dot brands being activated and extending their usage. And the great thing about that is that as this is not their core business, they do like to talk to each other and share learnings and try and make sure that they develop the best practices possible to do certain things in launch processes, for SEO, making sure that that is not impacted adversely when they move across, or to discuss perhaps the risks around universal acceptance and how to prepare yourself for any feedback from the internet users. So here's some examples on the Brand Registry Group website, brandregistrygroup.org. We've started to put some useful resources out there that are in the public domain, so we're happily sharing those as well. And we like to incorporate feeds from the stuff that Tony does and from others in the marketplace, which just promotes what's going on in the dot brand space. And here we've got a couple of samples on the slides of case study with HSBC and the use of their URL shorteners. And certainly in that respect, that's another avenue in of gaining awareness across a vast organization that a .hsbc is available. So that started to spur a lot of internal interest to do a lot more. And from Fox, it's the importance about how to gain internal engagement to support all of that planning to delivery and making that transition most effective. It's not just a short-term event. There's a lot of planning that goes into this because it's new space, new territory that they don't want to mess up. They want to make it as effective as possible. If we just carry on to the next slide, thank you. So, actually, could we just go back one? I think just to break it up a bit here, there's more resources on the site. Perhaps if I could just ask Cole some of the things that we've been working on and other things that are available on the website, that would be helpful. Thanks.
Sure. Thanks, Martin. So this is Cole Quinn with Microsoft, and I chair a committee called Registry Operations and Best Practices. So from the beginning, the BRG had typically been focusing a lot of its efforts on policy development and making sure that dot brands were well represented in the registry agreement. Mm-hmm. And then as time went on and these brands applied and received and launched and delegated, the shift became transitional from policy development and more towards operations. So now we have this thing, how do we run it and what do we do with it? And one of the things that I love about the Brand Registry Group is the ability for the members to cross-pollinate and share experiences and not make it so that everybody hits the same landmines. So we have been developing a repository and a platform for people to share experiences. And the Registry Operations and Best Practices Committee is the conduit to be able to kind of set that up and organize it into a framework that's consumable. So we develop the content and the material based on the topics and issues that are relevant and important to the members. And we have put those into a roadmap and prioritized those in levels of effort versus value. And a few things that we've been working on for deliverables, for example, this last year we worked very closely with the GDD staff to develop and publish a general operations manual for dot brand registries. This is a really easy to consume and read guide to engage and navigate ICANN, get through the ecosystem and basically find out who's who, and also highlighting and clarifying in a really succinct way what your obligations are as a registry operator. We've also developed a checklist to help folks with the redirect program. Like Tony mentioned in his presentation, one of the easiest, lowest risk, and legitimate use cases in using your .brand would be to simply redirect it back to your legacy URL structure so that when you go off and try to socialize your .brand and get some of these names in the wild and get people used to seeing them in marketing campaigns and on the internet, you're not undermining your company's current domain strategy, right? They might be focusing all of their SEO and all of their efforts on their .com, and if you go in and successfully launch a .brand, which has the side effect of stealing traffic from yourself, that's going to be a tough sell. So what we're doing here is helping folks do this right so that you optimize your SEO and do the redirect checklist correctly. There's a couple other things from a technical side also that we're framing up. One of the most interesting things is something that we're working with Ben from Google on, which is called HSTS. It stands for HTTP Strict Transport Security. And this is a preloaded list where if somebody were to type in anything .brand, if that .brand is preloaded with these different browsers, it automatically sends it in a secure mode, using a secure protocol. And so these are some of the interesting things that can be done to the right of the dot that can't necessarily be done to the left of the dot. So, as I said, we've got a lot of people in the brand registry group that are kind of exchanging these ideas, and we have our ear to the ground. We're trying to glean all of this great community information and put it into a put it into a format that's consumable, not just to the BRG, but also we're going to have some of the content available from our website under registry operations. And with me, as always, is Ben.
Yeah, I guess I don't have too much to add, but we currently have, I believe, 8 top-level domains on the HSTS preload list. Actually, yesterday, Firefox just rolled out the version that offers support for that. So it's supported in almost all major browsers now, which is great. And most of the TLDs on it are Google's, including .google and .app, which is launching in Sunrise at the end of this month and in general availability in early May. So you'll actually start seeing lots of domain names on HSTS preloaded TLDs soon. And we also have .bank and .insurance on the list as well. Those are the first two TLDs from other operators. And we're working with several other operators now as well to add it. Actually, adding stuff to the list is very easy. You basically send an email, and then we confirm that you are who you say you are, and it gets added to the list. So there's like zero engineering effort required on the registry side. It's very simple. The only thing is, obviously, that means that every single website you're serving on that TLD has to be HTTPS. And obviously, you should be doing that already, as that's a best practice. But that's just the one obvious ramification to be aware of. And we think it's an obvious best fit for every .brand TLD. Every company should be using secure connections anyway. It's too much of a liability not to. Like, you're just leaving your customer data open to being stolen by, you know, who knows what. So it's just an obvious fit for every .brand TLD. If you never intend on hosting an insecure site, and you shouldn't be, then it's just obvious, get it on the list now, because it takes a few months to roll out.
Obviously.
Yes.
Who do you send the email to, and who has to send the email?
So you can start the conversation. Anyone can send it. And then to verify the ownership of the TLD, it's whoever, like, something through, like, the IETF, primary owners. Primary. I don't know the full details, something primary content of the TLD. But as far as getting it on the list, those of you who know me can contact me directly, and I'll get you on the right path. Or go to hstspreload.org. I'll repeat that. That is hstspreload.org. That's the main home site for the HSTS preload list, and there's instructions on there about how to add TLDs to the list. And if you literally just put the name of the TLD in the box at the top, and if it's a TLD, it'll just say, like, here's the email address to contact if you want this on the list. So it's very simple.
And that information will be on the website as well. All right, back to you, Martin. Oh.
So this is Sarah from Unit Registry. In my previous life, I was with a registrar, and for 10 years, we helped a lot of brands get their dot brands. But in my 10 years experience with brands, the truth is, the comment that I got most often is, I'm not using it because no one is using it. So obviously, this is awesome, and it's an information that I assume all registrars have. In my new role, I'm at a registry, and we have all those TLDs in the lanyard. And I have seen, as we know, the second round is not even close to happen yet. And it might be 10 years before the ones that were early adopters got it and can develop it, and the ones that were not on that round and still have not. But what I'm seeing from our TLDs is a lot of brands that are actually using, obviously I'm just focusing on my TLDs because it's the usage that I am analyzing. So I'm just offering to the group, I know this is a very brand-centered group, but I have seen big, big brands using TLDs for their main sites. Just give you an example of StubHub. StubHub uses .pix for people to put all the pictures when they go to concerts through tickets that they have bought through StubHub. So if you ever need, I mean, as a registrar, you are already my client, so that information is for free. Just reach out to me. But if you ever, or anyone in this group ever, needs that kind of information to add, it's more brands that are using it while they wait to be able to have their own brand. And we know it's not cheap, so it's not that all the brands are ever going to be able to get all their brands as TLDs. Some of them just have many, many brands, so that's another complicated resource. And we are trying to make everybody aware that those things exist and that they are still not shocked when a website is not .com and they don't even know what really .newstar means. So again, I'm offering myself as a resource if you ever need how brands are using the new TLDs from another point of view.
Thank you. Appreciate that. So we'll just move through some other points here. So just looking forward now, I think from what Tony was saying and other comments, this sort of momentum breeds further momentum. And what we're seeing and what we're trying to do is to raise that awareness level so that it does start to get people aware that if they've got this utility to put it into play, and as the new GTLD round 2, 3, 4, 5 starts to firm up, then I think also we'll see some of the others there that haven't activated will come into play to take advantage of that early adoption. But with that, because of the different nature of these dot brands, particularly with the B2C market, as they launch and use their online services for their customers, that user adoption is going to grow and grow and grow. So we've seen that significantly change over the last year, and certainly no adverse issues from a customer perspective. So this is a great way in terms of promoting new GTLDs. And we had the opportunity to sit on a session on Monday, I think it was, a walk in the shoes of a new GTLD registry operator. And it was really clear from that particular session that from the array of different registries that have emerged in this last round, that there is much more focus on purpose and using that for the benefit of internet users. So as I said earlier, with the brands having that ability to control end-to-end from the root of the internet through to delivery of the services to their users, we also can see that those with validated registrants and high levels of entry, restrictive TLDs, such as .pharmacy, .bank, .insurance, that those are very similar, but kind of they are one step back. They're controlling the registrant to a certain degree as to what they can do. But across those, there's an element of, you know, positiveness, which is zero abuse, no confusion for those internet users. And that's going to build up, I think, more and more as we see people convert over and transition their use cases into the dot brand space. And with that, as the technicians get to grips with perhaps better data that they can actually exploit from seeing who's interacting with their registry and some of the NX domains information that Cole referenced earlier, there's going to be a lot more interest internally within those organizations to see what this DNS thing can actually do. We've traditionally used it to distribute domain names. So there will be opportunities emerging as those technicians start to explore what it is they've actually got beyond just a delivery of website, email, and so forth. And so that will stimulate new ways, I think, to utilize the DNS in the future. And notwithstanding all of the pain that was in the last round, more brands are going to apply. If we can make it more simple, more easier, more predictable, that's going to encourage even more to come and apply. We do know that there are brands queuing up to apply for the next opportunity. And hopefully by encouraging others to see the value in using it, but it's notably a long-term aim, not a short-term gain, that they will have the opportunities to have a considered decision before the next round opens up. But nevertheless, it would be helpful, I think, within the ICANN arena to be able to put the message across that there are extremely good success stories to be had out of the latest round, and to encourage others to think about pushing forward with the next application window. So with that, I'm going to close off, I think, with just go and visit our site for more information. It's just been refreshed, so we've got lots of new material on there, and it will continue to be built up with resources available to the public, and we have a lot more buried in there for our users, our members, to access as well. So without further ado, if there is any more questions, feel free to ask now. Otherwise, you can have an early lunch.
I'm sorry. I'm keeping you for lunch.
It's up to you. Laurie.
I probably should have asked this to Newstar, but I have a comment and a question. So I'm Laurie Schulman from the International Trademark Association. So, of course, we have a deep interest in brands. And I do want to say that I am frequently asked for use cases and do go to the Brand Registry Group site frequently. But also I want to – there's also a Brand Registry Observatory that is co-sponsored by VeriSign, I think cum laude, correct? So there are a lot of online resources for people who need data, who are making presentations. So as I said, I use it all the time. I have the question about cost and socializing cost to clients. Prior to onboarding at INTA, I did advise clients on dot brands, and this was before anybody knew what they were actually going to look like or how they were going to operate. But I still think it's difficult, and maybe people can share some insights, and maybe not now, but maybe later with me, catch me in the hall or whatever, about this issue about we wanted to save money, because that's not the perception at all. You go through the cost of a lengthy ICANN application process, then you go through the cost of implementation, then you go through the cost of rethinking, you know, whatever your marketing issues are and how you're going to fund those from a corporate perspective. So I think that there probably would be helpful for many to have more data on sort of typical costs, average costs. I know some of that's proprietary, but I think it's super difficult to translate these issues to clients that may be considering it who really just don't know how to budget for it.
And to be clear, I mean, the Brand Registry Group is not out there to sell brand TLDs, but what we do try and do is see what these models look like and the cost elements involved, what are the rewards. And so I think for GDD Summit this year, we may be able to actually hone in on some of the particular information that you're referring to. So with experience, with that knowledge of, yes, there was some big costs up front, but what does it look like now that you've got it in operation? Tony referenced different elements there that they can utilize their dot brand and potentially save some costs. But again, it's not a revenue-generating machine. It's in support of many more wider things, their communications, their, it could be a lot to do with supporting their business that it doesn't necessarily translate into a visible website or social media presence. So there's other elements to that that we probably need to explore further, but haven't had the ability yet to get that experience of use in and tangible measures, certainly on the cost side. But thanks for that. Mark?
I think just to address that question, it's a great question. I think part of the answer was in Tony's presentation and other materials you see on the Brand Registry Group website. I mean, really, it's not cost savings. And if you look at it that way, you know, you're looking at it the wrong way. It's an expenditure. But what is it an expenditure for? A variety of different things, right? So security on the one hand, higher visibility, you know, it's a marketing expense. And I think, you know, it's not the type of endeavor that you could categorize as one type of expense. I think it's rare you're going to find a company where this initiative would fall under, you know, one area of the company. It would fall under many areas of the company. And I think like other more global and significant initiatives that a company takes, part of the trick is getting a lot of different people on board and making sure you have the proper buy-in from multiple budgets in the company and not just one. But, you know, the revenue saving thing, you're never going to get your money back. But that's not the point.
I would add. Sorry.
Is that in response? Sorry.
I was just going to add. I think Tony's presentation was really interesting, and I think it was almost, you know, the cost thing wasn't a factor clearly in Newstar making their application. You know, they'd got it, but I guess it's, you know, having got this wonderful asset and all of the other, you know, potential benefits of it, you know, a kind of perhaps even not necessarily expected benefit was also discovering that they might be able to save on their search costs. So we think it's more like that rather than it being the cost being a driver.
So as a corporate domain portfolio manager, one of the things that resonates with me is that the idea there would be that if you are fully committed to your dot brand, then it would ideally reduce the need to go after all of the proliferation of other domain names, including aftermarket, which can get quite spendy. So, and also the need to maintain such a robust portfolio of defensive, purely defensive names as well. So in that regard, I can see a reduction in savings in that one piece of the overall picture.
So no single answer. There's multiple of aspects to that.
Thank you, but all interesting.
Thank you. Brian?
Thanks, Brian Beckham, for the record. I'm a big fan of the work you guys are doing here, and I know that you've made a lot of progress with for example, getting a dot brand specific contract. And ICANN certainly has learned a lot over the course of the past few years in terms of how to process applications, how to vet back end providers. So there are probably a lot of good lessons learned and potential economies of scale and efficiency gains for future rounds. And I know I hear that there's brand interest in a future round and would be even more brand interest if, for example, ICANN knocked its close to $200,000 application fee down to $40,000 or $50,000 or amortized the fee over a number of years. So I'm just curious, how receptive has ICANN been to these ideas of kind of efficiency gains learned from the first round, lower cost, that sort of thing, that would actually be sort of a rising tide that lifts all ships, especially when we hear that with relatively slow uptake in the program generally, there's a keen interest from, I think, all corners of the community to see more brands in this space to drive visibility for these new spaces. Thanks.
I mean, when you refer to ICANN, ICANN.org simply just directs you to subsequent procedures. I think that we've tried avenues before to say, you know, it makes sense if you want to keep this thing active and live, that if you want to take in applications from a sort of low-risk entities that could be including dot brands, that would have been effective to keep it the momentum going whilst they made some continual improvements to the process. Nevertheless, every time that we attempted that, it was always pushed down into subsequent procedures. You need to go and do it with the community and to push it out that way. So it's very much geared towards the work tracks within subsequent procedures. There have been discussions on that, and we have a number of members that are actively participating within each of the work tracks, if not actually co-leading those work tracks, to keep that momentum going to conclusion and to move forward with the next opportunity. But it's something that's going to be very difficult to try and get a separate application window before a lot of that work is complete. Accepted by the community, and actually could divert what are currently scarce resources that have been confused with GDPR, IANA transition, and all of those components that have emerged since the application round first started, that's taken a lot of the resources away, and it's slowed down probably a lot of the work. Mark?
I think in most cases, like with any questions, ICANN will not give you a direct answer. I think part of the answer probably lies in their current budgetary woes. It seems unlikely that when they want to hire 5 million more staff members and send 5 million ALEC people and so forth to meetings, that the price will not go down much. But other than that, they haven't been very specific, except for at least one occasion I'm aware of where Akram specifically said that they may not want to lower the price because they don't want to encourage too many applicants, and that there's a concern that if there's too many applicants and there's too many TLDs, that ICANN turns into the role of the domain registrar, except that it's top-level domains, not second-level domains. So on at least one occasion, he said that.
Okay, so we're nearing the end of our meeting session. Does anyone have any final questions or comments for us?
For record, I am Flavio Garces from the fellowship program. I had a pretty technical question. If my trademark expires or something like that, I can modify my that brand for any reason? I can modify my that brand. For example, if I have a new brand or my brand expires.
Susan, thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that question. So, once you've got your string, and indeed once you even applied for it, you know, once you've put in your application, you can't change the word that you applied for. So, if your brand, for example, if you were to have a refresh of your brand and change your brand, you wouldn't be able to change your TLD in the way the rules are currently set up. What you can do, the rules regarding brand TLDs specifically in terms of the specific provisions that apply to brands and give them certain safeguards, require an annual certification, and included in that is things like you have to certify that your trademark is still registered and valid. And so if you were if a situation were to arise where your trademark for some reason was no longer registered, it wouldn't cancel your TLD altogether, but it would lose the status of a dot brand. And then it would have to be opened up to the kind of the wider community and become more of a kind of open commercial TLD model. So you wouldn't automatically have your brand cancelled because your trademark was cancelled, but it would stop having that brand TLD status.
So we have one quick question or comment from Jonathan, and then we'll close out the session.
Yeah, and I realize I'm between you and lunch, so I'll make it really, really fast. I just wanted to say that I sat in on this session. I'm very delighted with all of the great work that's going on in the Brand Registry Group. Tony Holmes, I thought, did a fantastic job. Oh, Tony Kirsch, excuse me. I will be having some dot coffee soon. Tony Kirsch has done a fantastic job with Neustar presenting what their case was. And I wanted to say that we have a growing, between the Domain Name Association and the Brand Registry Group, a growing amount of collaboration and work that we're doing, and we're delighted to see your work. And we're here to help you amplify your message and help get the word out as well. So I wanted to just state my compliments to you on great work, and look forward to collaborating and helping you amplify the successes.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. That's perfect, because I was going to end with, you know, although the BRG spends quite a bit of time at ICANN, that's not all that we do. We reach out to through INTA and through the DNA and through very different resources and try to get to the marketing people and the digital people beyond the policy stuff. So with the new website, hopefully you can contact us through there, but we'll also be outside. I think we're getting kicked out of the room in a couple of minutes. So thank you again for all participating, and have a good lunch. Thank you.
Before everybody scatters, we'd like to take a group photo of anybody that's a member of the BRG. Please go to this side. I think that'll be the best backdrop. I'll do it on mine, and I'll send it to you. So.